Connecting sleep to sports isn't easy, but here goes. Mattress Firm is America's neighborhood mattress store, and it should be your goal to check out the deals they have going on every day. Their mattresses are softer than your rival team's defense. They get a 10 out of tennis. You'll love your new bed. Okay, all terrible dad jokes aside, head to mattressfirm.com/podcast and stretch your budget further than a gymnast before a floor routine. We are deep diving Super Bowl 52. Do the Patriots push it deep or go quick strike with the passing game? Can the Eagles take over with their run game? And what about those unstoppable tight ends? Also, yes, we will unveil our predictions. Plus, a surprising hire closes out the latest coaching carousel and a look at the NFL's regular season awards, all on the Super Bowl preview edition of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. It is Super Bowl week, and I have actually, look, I wasn't super excited about this matchup a week ago, maybe. I was a little bit bummed that my preseason prediction of the Vikings fell through. But over the past week, I've gotten really excited about Eagles-Patriots. I think this is going to be a much better game than people are expecting, and I'm really happy to talk about this.
Well, it's nice that you're in sports media and you've decided to get excited for the Super Bowl this year. I think our listeners will appreciate that, and that'll certainly make for a better conversation here.
Yeah, rather than the two of us sitting quietly for the next hour. We're also going to talk Pro Bowl, Andy.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we are going to talk some...
We're not talking Pro Bowl. The media complaining about the Super Bowl. What do you think of that? What do you think of that? The media complaining about the Super Bowl.
What do you mean complaining about it? So, like the matchup, the actual game when it happens, or like the media set? I don't like people complaining about like the setup of the media stuff, which I'm already hearing about. Oh, you know,
that's kind of what I was talking about. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not
that's kind of what I was talking about.
You deal with it.
Which I feel like the complaint about it's not a great matchup is a distant cousin of media complaining about their free trip with almost all access to the Super Bowl.
And people just go there and eat and drink nonstop. Nobody works during the Super Bowl because there's nothing to work on until the game.
Don't say that, because some of us like to go for the whole week, and they don't want the Mark Moravics and Peter Kings of the world who run the budgets to hear that.
Oh, boy. Well, we are going to obviously talk a lot of Super Bowl here. We're going to do the deep dive matchup, both sides of the ball. We're also going to talk a little bit of coaching news. Steve Wilks got the job in Arizona. We haven't discussed that yet. And we are going to unveil our NFL honors, if I guess we're branding that correctly the way the NFL does. They're awards. We just call them NFL awards most places, but they are NFL honors as far as they go. But that will be the end of the show. We're going to start with the Super Bowl, because it's a big deal.
Number one.
Let's start by breaking down Patriots offense versus Eagles defense. You know, we talked about the Patriots and sort of the new approach with a passing game. We talked about it a lot early in the year, more deep passing. And early in the year, we were kind of saying, okay, Brady's taking more hits. He's taking a lot more hits than he's taken in the past. I don't know what the final number was, but I know halfway through the season he was on pace to basically take more hits than he ever had in a season. It really wasn't a story down the stretch, but by the same token, the Patriots haven't seen a pass rush like this Eagles pass rush. Is this the kind of thing that sort of, I don't know, it sort of sets it over the edge? I mean, we saw it in Super Bowl 42. That was the difference, that Giants pass rush, and now we're seeing another elite four-man pass rush. How worried should the New England Patriots be about this?
Well, not worried. I mean, you show up to play. I think the discussion was, is there going to be a cumulative effect with Brady and the pressure? And the answer wound up being no, because Brady was fantastic in the AFC Championship game, and here they are. And he's been healthy enough. He's a standing quarterback, last standing quarterback. So that's gone out the window, and that's a discussion for next year. New England and pass protection in this game and keeping Brady protected, because when they have lost, their last playoff loss, I believe, was the 2015 15 AFC Championship to Denver. That was another game where the pass rush got home. And in Denver's case, it started with coverage. And the key is being able to get to Brady without blitzing him. And that's what Philadelphia can do. Because when you don't blitz him, you keep those bodies back in coverage. You force him to theoretically hold the ball. And then your four-man pass rush becomes more of a factor. And when you combine those two, the pass rush with Brady holding the ball, you can get Brady being a little bit jittery. And he, you know, he's not going to turn into Blaine Gabbert, but that's enough to take him off of his rhythm, and now he's a slightly different quarterback, and you're not playing against the greatest of all time. You're playing against a variation of him. So that's Philadelphia's only chance. They will not win the Super Bowl without pressuring Brady, and if they do pressure Brady, that doesn't mean they will win the Super Bowl, but they have to get that pressure. And I would imagine New England understands that, and the question becomes, do they do what they've done a little more in the playoffs, certainly against Tennessee, and spread out and try to get the ball out quickly, or do they do what they've done all season long and trust that their O-line can block it up? I would imagine the reason they're here, Gary, is because they can do both, and not just that they have to game plan both, they can do both within the flow of a game. So I would imagine they'll come out and try to have run-pass balance and be their usual selves. And if it's apparent after a few series that, hey, we're not able to block these guys, or we're having to keep too many men in protection and it's taking us out of some of our other concepts, they can easily slide into the spread empty formations. They'd probably go no huddle when they do it and reestablish a rhythm that way.
So I'd say three things. First of all, I wasn't talking about the cumulative effect, Andy. Everything we're talking about is going to be Super Bowl. I was just saying, are you terrified with this front five that you have with the Patriots? We really haven't talked about it since back in like September or October. We just haven't thought about them really. Are they going to be overwhelmed like we've seen the Patriots get overwhelmed up front in a couple of past Super Bowls? And really, I mean, kind of overwhelmed up front for at least the first half of the game before the Falcons got worn down last year. But
yeah.
Setting that aside, okay, if you're the Eagles, you know you can, you know you probably have the advantage up front. You're going to be able to generate pressure with your four guys. Can you do some things? You know, the Broncos used to drop a guy into those short zones to take away the quick strike stuff.
Yeah.
Do you do that, or is your bigger concern kind of, you know, we've said all year with the Eagles, you know, if there's a weakness on this defense is the fact that you can sort of get these cornerbacks deep, susceptible to double moves and that. Can you kind of focus on the quick strike stuff and say, hey, if we get beat over the top, we get beat over the top, but let's not get, let's not get carved up here.
Yeah. I think if they do get beat over the top for one, I think it's going to come on route combinations rather than double moves. I know they have given up some double moves, and that's fair, and certainly New England's going to take a look at that. But those guys know they've given up double moves as well, and they've played very well in the last few games. It was that Giants game where they got killed on the double moves, the Raiders game a little bit. Yeah, that was week 16, and then on into the playoffs they've been fine. So I would imagine New England, if New England's going to get these guys, it's going to be with slot receivers running outside. And anytime you do that, that takes time. That stuff does not unfold quickly. And sometimes a slot receiver crosses the field to run outside. Those deep over routes we talked about. So New England's going to have to block it up. And the more I think about it, Gary, the more I think they will, they'll get the ball out quickly. That Eagles defensive line, that front four is dominant. And if you can eliminate the front four by running the ball well, which I don't think you're going to run it down their throats, but staying on schedule and then working your play action game, which naturally slows things down. But the problem is that doesn't get the ball out quickly. So I guess we're talking in circles here. The game, the more the game goes in Brady's hands, the less it goes in the offensive line's hands. And that's your formula for success if you're New England. So I think that could lead to more of the spread formations. It's a hard one. It's a hard one to factor. And something is going to have to go wrong for them to change something, too.
Yeah. No, I think on the Eagles, I like that thought. I like the thought of giving my defensive line that extra tick to get home and saying, hey, if you're going to beat us with big chunk stuff, that's life. I mean, you know, you're not going to completely shut down Tom Brady. It's an either-or proposition. I'd rather take that option where you know, New England has to throw it a little bit further down the field and basically give that pass rush a chance to take over the game.
Number two.
You know, you mentioned the run game, and we'll make this topic number two. We'll touch on this for a moment. Nobody ran on the Eagles this year. I was looking at the numbers today. It's like the Raiders kind of got them a little bit in that Christmas night game, but no one really had like a big rushing game against the Eagles, which is just weird. Like, I mean, it's really impressive, but it's just the kind of thing where you'd expect, someone went for 190 against them at some point or something. Someone got a couple of big plays, but it just didn't happen this year. No one runs on the Eagles.
See, this is the dilemma you get with the Patriots. I feel like we just talked in circles in topic one, and we did, and the reason why is because we know how Philadelphia can beat them. That's what the four-man rush. In other Super Bowls, I've felt very confident about, hey, here's what the team can do, here's how it's going to go, here's what they do well. Well, the only thing I'm confident about in this game is that Philadelphia's only chance is with their defensive line dominating the game. What I'm not confident in is how New England will go about dealing with that. Will we see them? You can make a great case. You talked about running the ball, and yes, if they're going to be a downfield passing team, they have to establish the running game. You can't have both ways there. And your point, Gary, you're right. Nobody ran on the Eagles. Even the Raiders in that game, they didn't wind up being productive over the whole course of the game. They had a little nice stretch in the first half, and that was it. Nobody has taken the Eagles' defensive line down or moved the line of scrimmage against them. It's the Fletcher Cox factor. It's that they rotate so many guys, are always fresh, they're athletic, they're dynamic. We've seen New England in other years, particularly against the Jets in certain scenarios where that team's had some really good defensive lines where they just say, forget it. We're not even going to bother running the ball. Our short passing game is going to substitute that. And we're going to drop back 60 times and we're going to run it 10 times and we're going to make you cover James White. And if they do that, that does eliminate the Eagles' defensive line. It takes out the run defense issue. And it nullifies the pass rush. That's not the way they've played all season long, but it is the way they've played in past years, and they have had success playing for that way in spurts. So what would you do if you're Bill Belichick? Would you run the ball at all, or would you say we're just going to put the ball totally in Brady's hands and trust that he can get it out quickly? And I know we haven't done it, but we've done it a little bit, and it's going to be a Danny Amendola, James White game again.
I think you got to run it a little bit. I think you got to do something. Like you mentioned earlier, if you're going to do the deep passing, you got to do something to sort of keep the Eagles honest, keep them from completely paying their ears back and coming after you. And you know, I mean, Deion Lewis in there, you catch him off guard, you can pick up little 6-8 yard chunks and move the ball that way. And you know, obviously we're going to talk about the other side of the ball here. It's not like the Patriots need to put up, 40 points here to win this game. I think they probably feel pretty good that if they score in the, you know, mid to high 20s, they have a pretty good shot at coming away with a win in this one.
But something a coach said to me this week down at the Senior Bowl is, and it was a great point he made. He said in the NFL, and really in all of football, but especially the NFL, a 5-yard run feels really good. And a 5-yard pass does not feel very good.
Yeah.
And how does that factor into how people go about the game? He said one of the reasons New England has been great for so long is to them, they understand that a 5-yard run is the same as a 5-yard pass. And just because they feel different doesn't mean they impact the game differently. They'll move the ball however. So you said, well, Deion Lewis can pop off, maybe get 6 or 8 yards. Don't you see New England throwing the ball to James White to do that, especially if they know what Philadelphia is going to be in, which is probably cover 3? And the Eagles are not a great man-to-man defense either. They're adequate. They've got corners who can be physical, but that's not their M.O., The more I think about this, and we're kind of just thinking out loud and working our way through it, which is the nature of the first week or first day of Super Bowl week, the more I think New England is going to get the ball out quickly. Because why else would, even though you've been good at deep passing all season long, that's the only way that keeps Philadelphia's defensive line in play. And that's the only area where you know Philadelphia is clearly better than New England. Why would the Patriots mess with that when they've shown in recent weeks that they can go back to those spread formations and they can play their Julian Edelman brand of football with Danny Amendola inside?
Well, let me ask you this. Let's go back 2 weeks, because when Atlanta went to Philadelphia in the divisional round, or we should say the conference semifinals, as it should be branded, it looked like a good matchup for the Falcons was going to be Tevin Coleman and, you know, one of these linebackers maybe trying to match up with him and cover him in the passing game. And the Falcons really didn't go to it. Was that just a matter of the Falcons just choosing not to do that?
Or I don't know. Yeah.
Was it something where, you know, the Eagles maybe had a little better counter to it than we assumed they would?
Well, for whatever reason in that game, first of all, Atlanta did it with Devontae Freeman, not Coleman. And I don't understand why that was, because Coleman's been the guy in those spread empty formations all year. Coleman is Atlanta's James White, different brand of player, but we're talking about where they line up and kind of how they're used in empty sets. So they went with Devontae Freeman, who is not the receiving threat that Coleman was, and the Eagles put Michael Kendricks on him. And that's the Vikings also spread out empty a lot against the Eagles in the second half. And typically it was Kendricks who followed the running back around. So does Philadelphia feel comfortable? And you put Kendricks on him, by the way, because when you're a four-man rush team, both of your safeties are free defenders. You can play with them anywhere on the field. That means your linebacker is now the guy that's covering the threatening receiver. You also have to have an answer for Gronkowski somewhere in here. I would imagine if New England's spreading out, you'll see Kendricks match up somehow, and then they'll play man, maybe zone within it, inside of it. What we also have to decide is, will Jim Schwartz do something different than what he's done all season long for the Super Bowl? And I would think he'll have a changeup or two, but I don't see him coming out and playing totally different, which means they're also not going to drop eight into coverage and rush only three, which is what teams have done to take away some of these quick strikes that I'm starting to become slowly convinced that New England will do.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like Jim Schwartz hasn't really he's not a big wrinkle guy.
He's not he'll do those he'll blitz very aggressively a few times each game. It'll be very interesting to see if he does that to Tom Brady. Because when he goes cover zero, he goes all out blitzes, and he does it in weird parts of the field. The other thing he'll do a little bit, and he does it against play action teams, they actually did it against Atlanta, they'll bring Rodney McLeod down into the box, their free safety. And when almost always when McLeod is in the box, you have to have your antennas up for a blitz. He's some kind of blitzer there in that scenario. So those are their change-up tactics, and we'll see if they do it. Michael Kendricks can also blitz. But again, blitzing Brady can be somewhat futile. The only reason you would do it is if you believe New England's running their play action stuff or their deeper drop back stuff. So you actually would be blitzing them on early downs and out of running formations. And that's not so risky, because if they run the ball, then it's a run blitz.
Yeah.
So it can happen, but we're going to see. It's a chess match at work, and these are veteran coaches going up against each other, each with some weaknesses to hide that happen to correlate to the opponent's strength, namely New England having to hide their offensive line against Philly's defensive line.
Number three.
All right, let's go topic number three. You mentioned this briefly, and obviously it's a headline in any Patriots game. How do the Eagles guard Gronk in this one? How do you think they approach it?
I think Malcolm Jenkins is the matchup guy when they do go to matchup stuff. And I could see Malcolm Jenkins being the matchup guy within zone as well. He plays down in the box. They play a lot of big nickel, too. They'll put Corey Graham on the field, make Jenkins their number three corner, essentially their slot guy, and that's important for where defenders line up in their zone rules. There's a lot of answers they can have to it. This is one team that's equipped to contend with Gronkowski. I would by no means predict that any of these guys shut down Gronkowski. And if you told me Gronkowski gets 9 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown in this game, I'm not a bit surprised. But there are answers here. I think this whole how do they guard Gronk thing tends to get overblown, because defenses don't typically change up their identity to deal with a tight end. And in Philadelphia's case, they're naturally equipped to handle tight ends because of how diverse they are at the safety position.
All right. Any other matchups you want to discuss as far as, I don't know, let's say, well, Brandon Cooks, what do you just put him on the side that you like better if you're the Patriots as far as
exactly, yep.
Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills?
You do, because you know where Darby's going to be. He's the right cornerback. Mills is the left cornerback. That is almost certainly not changing. Darby, both of those guys can move around, but they haven't all season long. So the Patriots can decide who do they like against who and what's the matchup there. If they want to get vertical with Cooks, that's when I think you'll see him go into the slot. There's another indicator, by the way. We talked about Rodney McLeod in the box as a blitz indicator. Cooks is not a great slot route runner. So when he does go to the slot, chances are he's running some kind of deep shot play, a deep over route, a deep post, a crosser, whatever it is. You need to be on alert for him going vertical because he's not very good going horizontal in short inside areas. I would imagine, again, we said earlier, I think that's how they'll get to their shot plays if they want to take it. It'll be with Brandon Cooks or Chris Hogan inside, and they attack the defense that way with multiple routes rather than just hoping their guys can beat Darby and Mills, which they can. And those are not shutdown corners, but those are quality NFL corners.
Okay, hang on one second, Andy, before we move on. You know, we all live busy lives, and unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done. So thank goodness there's Freshly, the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. Freshly's team of chefs create all-natural, gluten-free dinners and deliver them fresh to your door. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. No more worrying about having to figure out what's for dinner, and especially no mess to clean up after. I used to eat the buffalo chicken almost exclusively from Freshly, but earlier tonight I had the peppercorn steak, and I gotta say, I'm glad I expanded my palate there. Their menu is created by chefs for people who want to eat healthy but are living busy lives and don't always have the time to shop, cook, and clean. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy, like buffalo chicken with a loaded cauliflower or maybe the chicken parm. Customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted options. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Every single meal comes with a detailed and easy-to-read overview of each ingredient featured in the meal. And trust me, there's nothing better than knowing that no matter what happens in my daily life, that I have a chef-cooked dinner waiting for me at home. Check out this week's menu crafted by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to freshly.com/10things. That's 10things. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. That's freshly.com/10things, 10things, for $25 off your first order. Order today to see what life's like when you no longer have to think about dinner.
Number 4.
All right, Andy, let's talk about when the Eagles have the ball here, and let's we're obviously going to talk Foles. Let's start with the run game, though. You know, the Eagles have this expansive run game. The Patriots at times this year have been a little bit leaky against the run. That a lot of that was early in the year when they were sort of adjusting to the absence of Dante Hightower, but is there an opportunity for this Eagles run game to sort of take this game over?
I think with the commitment Philadelphia has to the running game and then all the different ways they can employ it, you always have to assume there's a great opportunity for their running game to take it over. Because they're one of the few teams that if their gap scheme stuff's not working, and for them, gap scheme means not just power and counter, but also trap and wham, where the tight end or the guard blocks, or rather the tackle, somebody down blocks on the defensive tackle and someone else works right up to the linebackers. Those are kind of misdirection-y type runs. New England does it 2 or 3 times a game as well with Devlin or Gronkowski blocking down. If that stuff's not working for Philadelphia, then they can go to a true outside zone game. They substitute personnel. Jay Ajayi, who's not that kind of runner, at least not in his opinion. He has done it before in Miami. So there's a lot you have to contest with. The problem I have, I always have trouble envisioning the Patriots defense struggling against the run, because when you put on the film, they are consistently better than their run defense numbers suggest. And that's part of the reason this season they ranked 29th in yards allowed, but 5th in points. And they've been like that for a few years now. They're this bend but don't break defense. That's an extreme bend but don't break. They've been a pretty good defense on the yards allowed and a great one on points allowed. And part of that's because I think there's such a sturdy, stable run defense, even if the numbers don't always reflect it. Numbers can be misleading with the run game. You need to see how the running game impacts the flow and the down-to-down flow of the competition. And I think New England makes you earn every single yard you get on the ground, and that does something to a team. That's almost demoralizing to an offense because it gets back to those, can you be patient enough? Can you run the ball 30 times in the game and get 120 yards, but you only got 90 yards through 25 times. I mean, it's hard for offenses to stick on schedule like that, especially if Tom Brady's scoring points on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we talked a little last week, you know, Jason Kelce had this tremendous year for the Eagles. No one really put that big body on him to try and keep him from getting out there. The Patriots would seem to have that sort of front. You know, they got the two big guys in the middle. You know, they don't really have a lot of. It's not so much speed as it is, you know, they have the edge setters on the outside. It seems like this is the kind of defense that maybe is a pretty good counter for a guy like Kelce.
I would agree with you because they'll go to that too. They go to basically they're a five down front. We talk about the Texans in the diamond front with the 2-3 techniques, the two wide nine players, and then Whitney Merciless over the center. The Patriots do that in a base situation, and they'll have Malcolm Brown over Kelce, and they're going to have Lawrence Guy as one of the three techniques, probably Ricky Jean-Francois as one of the others. They might not be pure three techniques. They're certainly not pass rushers, but they're going to put five guys up on the line of scrimmage and play run defense that way and set the edge with Trey Flowers and Eric Lee, their edge guys, and keep a Landon Roberts clean because he's a fast downhill linebacker, but he's also undersized and he's a little bit prone to missteps. So he needs to have clean surface to play from so he can change direction and read and react and everything. Kelce with a guy directly over him, that is a potential game changer for Philadelphia. And what they're going to have to do, I would imagine that means can they run? I mean, that's what's hard. It's hard. That's a hard matchup to get away from. If they're putting someone directly over the center, I was going to say, well, maybe you run outside zone, but that can stymie the center as well, and it certainly prevents Kelce from getting out in front and out in space where he has been dominant, where that's what earned him first-team All-Pro this year.
Yeah. Now, this should be a good one, and you know, we saw last week at this point, the AFC title game. The Jaguars had a little bit of success in the first half of that game, and then New England made their adjustments at halftime, and there was nothing really to be had on the ground for the Jaguars in the second half when they really needed it.
And see, I think that brings us to the. And I know I'm not stealing your job here, but this is the next topic.
Number five.
There it is. Yeah, Nick Foles. Because what Jacksonville faced or what New England did to Jacksonville, that was in reaction to Blake Bortles. They started bringing some of those blitzes, which is uncharacteristic of New England, but they do it just enough that you fear it. And people think that Matt Patricia has a great understanding of pass protection rules. And they brought those corner blitzes on 3rd and 8. You're right, the run defense did tighten down. That's how you got to 3rd and 8. And it looked like a totally different Patriots team in the second half of that game. So if Philadelphia runs the ball well, for one, I don't think that's going to scare New England. Remember, Atlanta ran the ball very well in the first half of last year's Super Bowl too. New England can make an adjustment, and if they have to, they'll load the box and force the QB to beat him. And that's what they did with Bortles. And ultimately, he wasn't able to quite do that. They're going to view Nick Foles the same way. I know he just had the greatest game of his life, and that's to be respected. But you have no choice. You have to make Nick Foles beat you. You can't let Philadelphia's running game dictate the terms for 4 quarters.
I was going to say, are we off the Foles bandwagon? Are we looking at the first 50 games of his career, or are we looking at game 51 or whatever the number would be?
Yeah, that's the question. Is Nick Foles the quarterback we've seen the most, and that's who we prepare for, or is he the quarterback we've seen most recently, and that's who we prepare for? And either way, you still have to land up and play good defense, you know. And in Minnesota, the reason they got beat late in the down by Foles is in part because their pass rush didn't get home. So New England has to account for that and say, well, we got to rush the passer. And they've been a better pass rush lately than they were early in the season. But if we have to answer the question and say, well, you can't just play good defense, you have to pick one, they're going to pick the Nick Foles that they've seen the most. I don't think they're going to believe that Lightning can be caught twice in a bottle. And you certainly wouldn't build your game plan on that.
And by the way, that was pretty good estimation by me. This will be appearance number 53, including postseason, for Nick Foles.
Yeah,
in his
it is. How many postseason games does he have? How many postseason games?
Three. He had the two this year, obviously, and he had the one they lost to New Orleans at
the Saints,
home.
Yeah.
Back in
the Chip Kelly year. Yeah, 2013.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, the obviously, you know, RPO has been the big thing with Foles the last two games, even though he added some of that late in the down playmaking that we've never seen before. But does that work against New England? I mean, New England covers really well. I mean, that's kind of their identity in pass defense. They have the coverage guys. They don't necessarily have the dynamic pass rushers.
Correct, and I think they also have the coverage guys that match up stylistically. It's Stephon Gilmore and Alshon Jeffrey, and I think that's advantage Gilmore. Jeffrey, for all his size, he's not always great at getting off of press coverage. And I think Gilmore, with those long arms, that's where he can be at his best. And then Malcolm Butler on Torrey Smith, and that's another advantage for New England. Malcolm Butler can be had by, here's another guy with some issues with double moves, particularly if they're crossing the field or big change of direction routes. But Torrey Smith doesn't run those routes. He's a straight line player, and I think Butler may have a fine day against him. Nelson Agholor and Zach Ertz. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, would you move Butler to the slot in this one and put him on Agholor?
I would not, because Eric Rowe's played pretty well in the slot, even though he looks nothing like any other slot corner in the NFL. And if I'm New England, I want to test Agholor. Where he has been good is with free access this year. Where he was bad his first 2 years was when he was playing outside, where you see more press coverage. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't press a slot receiver because they line up a few yards behind the line of scrimmage, but you still have that 5 yard area where you can be physical with them. And I would imagine they'll feel Rowe gives them that, especially with those longer arms. It's easier. Butler would have to be a little more aggressive and lunge and make some plays. Rowe can be physical as a reacting type of defender. So he can be physical without gambling as much. My guess is they're going to feel that's a fine matchup. Aguilar's probably a bit quicker than Rowe. But let's see if Agholor can play when someone's putting their hands on him, because early in his career, he could not. So I think that's the matchup there. And then the other one, that leaves Zach Ertz. And Patrick Chung is another physical defender. And Zach Ertz is not a great guy against press either. To his credit, he's gotten much better. But these RPOs, Gary, Landon Roberts is the only guy that can be vulnerable to him because of, as we said, he can be a little reactive to misdirection stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's all they're going to need to do is make Roberts react and throw the ball. New England's not going to give these receivers consistently clean access. Maybe you will on some of the first downs, but if Philadelphia comes out and completes two or three of these RPOs and Nick Foles is getting his rhythm, and you know that's how they're going to try to get him in rhythm, get him comfortable to play. It's a Super Bowl for a backup QB. You got to do something simple and comfortable for him early in the game to settle him in. I could see New England pressing and taking that stuff away and just being a little bit more physical in coverage. They've got the guys to do that against this team.
Number six.
Let's talk about Zach Ertz a little bit. I mean, he's probably going to be the primary target for Foles again in this one. We talked about how do the Eagles counter Gronk? How do the Patriots counter Ertz in this one?
You trust that Patrick Chung can do what he's done well all season and match up. And when Chung, by the way, when he matches up, it's usually with two free defenders involved. McCourty's as a robber and Daron Harmon as a free safety. And something the Patriots have been willing to do is use one of those guys. And at times it's been Daron Harmon, the free safety, not the robber. They'll use one of those guys to dedicate a double team on whoever they feel is most dangerous. And I would imagine they're going to feel that's going to be Zach Ertz. if for no other reason than those corners do match up, as we talked about. And I bet Ertz is kind of Foles' security blanket. I bet that's who Foles would look to if he's feeling uncomfortable. So there's safeties who can cover him. And let's remember, McCourty's a converted corner as well, and he's had success against safeties before. And Philadelphia, they don't have a particularly dynamic running back that can complicate matters. I'm talking about someone you can shift out of the formation and play out wide. I don't know if Corey Clement is quite that kind of guy.
Yeah, no,
he can play the role, but he's not Darren Sproles for him. So I think they match up fine with Ertz. I would not be super worried about it. He's the guy you have to take away, but you've got the resources to do that because you can handle the wide receivers one-on-one.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is a real bummer. No Darren Sproles, no Jason Peter. Seems kind of wrong.
No Carson Wentz. It's impressive.
Carson Wentz will conceivably, you know, have another Super Bowl run. Maybe he won't get all the way back. It's hard to get back, but it's tough. I mean, those guys are sort of winding down a little bit. This might have been it.
Yeah, it could be. How many teams could reach the Super Bowl with their MVP QB going down in the final quarter of the season, basically, their left tackle going down midway through, and then their number one mismatch-making piece, and especially out of the backfield, but I think overall mismatch-making piece, and Sproles going down as well. Doug Peterson has lost a lot of security and a lot of playmaking prowess with those three guys. And one other thing I'm curious, what do you think of this, Gary? I bumped into Carson Wentz's agents down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl that last week, and we debated two things. One, I think Wentz, if they win this Super Bowl, I think he will be thought of as a Super Bowl winning QB. Do you think he'll be viewed that way, or do you think people will hold it, you know, kind of hold it against him? The example I used was Phil Simms gets thought of as a two-time Super Bowl MVP. Remember, Jeff Hostetler won one of those in a very similar scenario.
Yes. I was going to say the exact same thing, where everyone everyone considers Simms to be the Super Bowl winning QB on that second Giants team. I would say he won't be considered a Super Bowl winning QB just because he's so good. He was so in the spotlight. He was such the identity, the star of that team, that you can't help but, when you tell the story of the Super Bowl, to say, they were missing their MVP caliber quarterback in this one and had to plug the afterthought backup.
And Simms had won one already before, so he was already kind of established he can win the big one if people think that way, I guess, and Wentz maybe not. The other thing I was wondering is, will Carson Wentz have a podium at Media Day or at any of these full team interview sessions? They usually give a podium to the 12 to 15 biggest guys, the guys they think are going to get the most people around them. I would imagine certainly Wentz will be that, but do the Eagles want him having a podium? And you're not going to put the podium next to Nick Foles, I would hope.
I was going to say, I wonder what the rules they set up are. I wonder if he can get out of it. I mean, if he has to be there, I think you have to give him a podium. On top of that, give him a podium. So, do they still do it where guys are? I actually haven't been doing Super Bowl in Super Bowl 40 was the last one I was at. Do they still have dudes like just sitting in the bleachers and stuff? But they have fans there.
Yeah. Yeah, the sad guys sit in the bleachers, like the long snapper and the assistant coaches. Some of those guys do, yeah. And then other guys just kind of walk
around.
You don't
want Wentz up
there. No, you don't, but if you're the Eagles, what do you want?
If he has to be there, do you want your backup
QB having a podium?
If he has to be
there. He does have to be there.
We have media night drama here.
Monday.
If he has to be there, he has to have a podium. He has to. It would be chaos, otherwise. Just logistically, it would be chaos.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
We'll see.
He's got to be the first backup to get a podium. Certainly backup QB to get a podium.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Tweet at us. Someone will know that. Somebody will, pick nits on this and tweet. Just send us a tweet. We'll pay attention. We'll be grateful for this one.
Please don't look it up if you don't know it, though. I don't want anyone to have to go through like.
Well, I'm kind of curious now. So, yeah, if you're willing to, I'd say, dude, I'm curious.
That's a sad way to spend your life, looking at old
all of it.
Media Day footage.
just sending the tweet is a sad way to spend your life. If you're already going to be sad, go ahead and do your research then, because I am kind of curious.
There you go. All right. Andy, before we move on, back to Mattress Firm. Let's keep the ball rolling, shall we? Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's neighborhood mattress store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. So, Andy, still lots of show left. We're going to do our season awards, our NFL honors. We're also going to talk Steve Wilks. We are also going to give predictions. We're going to predict a score and a game MVP and maybe some other things. Probably not some other things, but if you wanted to, you could do that.
Number 7.
Let's talk about the coaches for a little bit here. One thing that is interesting to me, the Patriots are going to lose both their coordinators after this one. Josh McDaniels will become the Colts head coach, and Matt Patricia will be going to Detroit. The Eagles won't lose either of their coordinators. They might lose John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, but not only are Jim Schwartz and Frank Reich not going anywhere, it seems like no one was all that interested in them as head coaching candidates, which is... it's a little bit baffling.
Keep in mind, it's only 5 head coaching jobs out there, and you have to wait a little longer on these guys. I mean, Patricia and McDaniels are both here, and they won the Super Bowl last year. You would have thought people would have been interested in them a year ago. And did Schwartz get any interviews? I know there was rumor with him to the Giants, but I don't think it's the biggest shock in the world that these guys are staying put. And Frank Reich has not quite gotten huge traction yet as a head coaching candidate. Maybe he will be. If I'm his agent, I am kind of wondering, hey, why is John DeFilippo, the QB coach who is technically below him on the totem pole, his name was hot and his name was on that list, that coaching search list that comes out in December. Mm-hmm. My guy wasn't. You know, what's the perception there about? I don't know. It's hard to forecast all these head coaching things, but these three guys, DeFilippo, Reich, and especially Schwartz, I think especially DeFilippo, they're in the conversation. And sometimes this stuff takes 2 years as well. By the way, I saw James Betcher in Mobile and reminded him, hey, Mike Vrabel just got the head coaching job the other day, not because the Texans ranked 32nd in run defense, and Vance Joseph got the head coaching job in Miami in Denver a year after his Miami defense ranked near the bottom of the league. And Gase's Bears, the year he was in Chicago, weren't great statistically, and that's when he got the Miami job. Sometimes these things take 2 years. There's a delay element with it. These coaches, they need their names out there a little longer.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd hire Frank Reich.
Yeah.
He can coach my team.
Andy? I've sat up in the bleachers and had him draw plays for me before, and he's very good. I mean, I felt like I learned how to it was 3-level stretches that we went over. Philadelphia is very good at getting one receiver deep, one receiver at the intermediate levels, and one underneath, and they get to it out of a variety of different formations. And Frank Reich, lucky for me, took me through all of that last year.
He good. He was really good with Phillip Rivers, too. If I had a young quarterback,
yeah, you're right.
I want Frank Reich around. But
backup QBs are successful as coaches a lot. And Jason Garrett, Philadelphia's own coach, Doug Peterson, when you're a backup QB, you see the game through a coach's mindset for almost all of your playing career. You get a huge advantage that way. It's a lot of more. You have a lot of experience at a variety of levels, and you have it from the player's perspective as well. You're not just one of these chess whiz offensive schemers that come in. You've seen it from all dimensions.
There you go. Well, we'll see what happens with those guys going forward. But that, yeah, a little storyline to think about as the year goes on. That coaching list, that recommended coaching list that comes
out,
that's always a weird list. There's always...
I agree. I don't know how
if I remember correctly, no McDaniels and no Patricia last year.
I don't understand. And McVay wasn't on the list last year, and he's probably going to win Coach of the Year. And so I don't understand how that list comes to be. I'm not saying it's not to be respected, but it's not the end-all, be-all. And I think sometimes it gets portrayed that way. If you get your name on that list, a recommended coaching list, you're going to get interviews. I mean, almost all those guys get get multiple interviews. So owners do look at that. And remember, owners aren't always – more as much informed or more informed than you would guess. They read the same stuff we do, and they don't watch as much of this film as we do, and they're not studying the game the same way. They got the business side of football to deal with. So that media coverage really matters for head coaching interview purposes.
Number eight.
Well, Andy, let's go topic number eight here. What's going to happen? Score predictions, MVP predictions. That's what we're doing right now. Would you like to go first?
I've already gone.
Who's your protected special teams player of the week?
No. Come on. Let's just say the score and move along. And everybody's saying the score this week. I already had to do mine for the magazine. I had New England 27, Philadelphia 16.
Is that what you're sticking with?
Yeah, I'll stick with that. And that doesn't mean – keep in mind, when we do these scores, we're trying to – paint an idea of how the game's going to go and the flow of the game as much of anything. It's like, I don't know if I think they're going to win 27-16, but that's the kind of game I anticipate this being.
I kind of anticipate a similar game. And by the way, there's still more show left. We're not wrapping up right now. I predict a similar game. I am going 24-21 New England, but I think it's going to be 24-13 in the final seconds. I think the Eagles will score a late touchdown. I think the line will have moved to 4 at that point. Eagles score a late touchdown, and then it'll come down to a lot of people on the edge of their seats for the 2-point conversion. And I think the Eagles get it, and they get their cover.
You know what?
Patriots win another Super Bowl and don't cover.
What's incredible is the Patriots have been to 6 Super Bowls now. This is their 7th, and the first 6 have all gone down to the wire. Absolutely down to the wire. Every one of them. And they've won some, they've lost some.
As upset as people get about the Patriots and, sick of the Patriots and whatever, Patriots Super Bowls are always entertaining. They're always great games. They're always memorable games. I mean,
I love about them, too, is they feel like football, too. They're great football games. It's not like where something weird and fluky happens or there's a big turnover on special teams that kind of decides the game. That would count as weird and fluky, I guess. It's just football gets played, decisions get made, and it's always a great chess match and battle of execution. They're well-played Super Bowl games. And I guess maybe someone could argue that the helmet catch is a little fluky, and I have no counter-argument to that. But you know what I'm saying. It's like the Patriot comeback thing. The Patriots always come back by just continuing to play football. They do just enough to win, and that's not by accident. They're built to play that way.
Oh, and I should mention, before we go on here, we are going to do a mailbag show. Not next week, because we're going to talk about the Super Bowl and what happens in the Super Bowl next week. But the week after that, first show of the offseason, will be a mailbag show. A couple people had written into us to point out, and also Sports Illustrated resident superfan Andy Gray mentioned the same thing to me the other day. We talked last week about how these Patriots comebacks are, there's never the super fluky play and all that. A lot of people are bringing up the Edelman catch last year in Atlanta, which I agree. It was sort of a wacky, fluky thing that when the Patriots favor, I'm just saying it wasn't, my counter was, it wasn't a 70 yard touchdown or something like that. It was obviously a huge catch, but not the mind blowing.
But look, that was a great catch too, though. Like that wasn't like when I think a fluky play, what gets overlooked is right before the end of the Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl, the Malcolm Butler interception, a few snaps before that, Jermaine Kearse had a ball defended by Butler, and Kearse was on the ground, and the ball landed in his lap, and it was like a 40-something yard completion. That's why they were down there near the goal line. I think if that stuff is fluky play or a missed tackle that results in, like you said, a 70-yard touchdown. That Edelman catch, was it a common catch? No. Was it a lucky catch? Also, no. He caught that with his hands. The helmet catch was much flukier than the Edelman catch.
It's a good catch. It's a great play. But there's a little bit of luck factor to create that situation. I think
sure,
that's fair
I mean,
to say
yeah,
it's a fluke factor. It's not maybe a full-on fluky play. By the way, I think it was at Jared Still was the first one to write in and tell us about that. But yeah, we're going to do the mailbag show, and we are going to open it up to literally any question you have. I would assume you'd want to talk off-season, free agency, maybe a little bit of draft, and well, you'll probably want to talk about whatever happens to the Super Bowl as well, but that'll be 2 weeks from now. If you want to start inundating us with questions, you can do that right now. You can do, let's say, email first, because that's easier to sort. So talkback@themmqb.com always helps you put podcast in the subject line, or you can tweet at us, Andy_Benoit, GGremling_SI, or you can send it to Facebook. We're both on Facebook. You can search for our names there and find us that way. Facebook's actually pretty easy to sort, too. I'm overwhelmed with Twitter. All the bots.
Got to log into Facebook, though. I forget to do that.
Well, there's no real people on Twitter, so I don't know. I don't know what our recommended method is anymore. Write us.
Whatever.
Write us a nice letter. Yeah. All right, Andy, before we move on. Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right. Free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Number nine.
Speaking of hiring, Andy, topic number nine, let's talk about Steve Wilks. He was the, presumed at this point. I don't think any other openings are coming, but presumed last hiring of this cycle. Goes to Arizona. A bit of a surprise. We'll talk about James Betcher, who is going on to be the coordinator in New York in a moment. But he was a candidate that was in-house if they wanted to go defense. And, you know, a lot of folks thought, they're going to have to bring in a new quarterback. Might be a young guy. This might be the year they draft one. Do you bring in the offensive guru and try and go that way? So, to bring in the defensive guy from outside the organization was a surprise. Not that Wilks is undeserving, but it was a bit of a surprise move by that logic.
Surprise to me, surprise to Betcher. Arizona's defense ranked higher than Carolina's in a lot of meaningful categories last year, and they don't have Luke Kuechly running things out there on the field. I know Wilks did a lot of stuff schematically, and he earned that job in Arizona, and he had a nice season. He got himself on that list as well, that coaching search list. I thought the teams around the league caught up to Carolina's new approach a little bit late in the season and started exploiting all the blitzing they were doing. They blitzed out of zone coverage, which is most teams blitz out of man-to-man, so it was a little bit unusual, and it left more space in the zones, and teams gobbled up that space, especially New Orleans at times. Arizona, on the other hand, they got better in their blitz packages late in the season. They started coming off the edge with Tyrann Mathieu, Buda Baker. They've got the personnel for that. They were a step ahead of defenses late or offenses late in the year. They finished the season stronger schematically than the Panthers did. So if it's between those two, I probably would have gone Betcher. He's also younger, plus he's been a defensive coordinator longer than Wilks. But I don't have any trouble with the Steve Wilks hiring in and of itself, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, they have a lot of interesting pieces to work with on the defensive side of the ball there. I think we both assumed the same thing. If they were going outside the organization, it was going to be an offensive guy because obviously they have to start anew with the quarterback and with the offensive setup there. So,
yep.
Should be interesting. Betcher gets the job in New York. This is another one. A little bit of a schematic change, though. I guess he's probably flexible enough to make it work with what they have with the Giants. And look, they have plenty of talent on that defense. They had some drama going on that maybe affected the way they performed a year ago. But you know, that's a talented defense. That's a borderline elite defense if everyone's pulling in the same direction.
And Betcher's going to run his stuff in New York. I can mm-hmm. all but guarantee you that. And I bumped into him down in Mobile right after the Giants job got announced, like 30 minutes later. And we went through his personnel, and he was going, who do we have, what do we have? And we were both talking back and forth. He's going to run that. He's got cover corners. And if you can play one-on-one outside, then you can do whatever you want with some of your designs inside. And he's got you could argue, even though he had Patrick Peterson in Arizona, he's got better corners in New York than he had in Arizona overall.
Yeah. No, they're really good. The Giants defense is really good from a talent standpoint. And what happened last year is, I don't know.
Sometimes that stuff happens.
I mean, I was going to say, someone will write a good oral history about that. I'm sure everyone's heard about the Eli Apple drama, and well, if you hadn't heard of it, you just had to listen to Landon Collins on the radio to find out about it. But
yeah, but there's new leaders in place, new head coach, new GM, new defensive coordinator, new attitude. It's a lot easier for those guys to be dumped now. Dave Gettleman will dump you if you give him reason to. Their new GM there in New York
drove a hard line. Yeah, that'll be interesting, and. We'll talk about it in the offseason. I think this Odell Beckham Jr. Contract negotiation is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, you're right. It will be.
I mean, the Gettleman Beckham setup here.
Number 10.
Let's go on to top number 10, Andy. This is normally our weekly awards. This time we're going to make it our yearly awards. They're going to announce these Saturday night at the NFL Honors, of which we aren't invited to, but important people from around the football and entertainment world will be there. So, Andy, who's your Castrol Edge Clutch Performer of the Year?
Is that how it goes? Is that one of the awards?
They used to have one. I can't remember who the sponsor was, but it was the NFL.com Fantasy Player of the Year, and it's just like they're trying to do this.
Well, that one can
nice
be salt.
And everyone has to wear a tux and all this stuff, and like, and then you have like all these just. I don't want to say they're crap awards. Some of them are very nice. But then they mix in just this garbage, and it's like, I don't know. Why do you do this? Don't have everyone dress up. Just do it. Do a conference call and announce them if you're going to have whatever.
Can I'm going to give my predictions for the awards. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do predictions for the awards. That'll be even better. Let's start with we'll work top down. Let's start MVP since I assume we'll say the same thing.
MVP is going to be Brady. It would have been Wentz because I think voters want to feel smart, and that would have felt like the smart pick to do, and I'm really thinking football here. It's been Brady all along, and when Wentz got hurt, that decision became a default for a lot of people.
Yeah. No, I agree. People like voting for new. I don't know if they do. Smart as much as just new.
Even I think Brady the smart hasn't. Feels new, or the new feels smart, yeah. Doesn't it?
It does. That is true. These are words of wisdom. Defensive Player of the Year. This one's going to be really interesting.
This is a hard one. I think it's Aaron Donald, though. It's Aaron Donald got 49 first-team All-Pro votes, if I'm not mistaken. And I think a lot of it had to do with Wade Phillips coming out and nominating Donald, essentially, for MVP, which was totally over the top, but that's and I understand why Wade Phillips would do that. And to Wade Phillips and his perspective, Donald is probably the MVP. I think that really got voters' attention, and Phillips has done that before, but he's done it correctly. I remember when he talked about J.J. Watt in overflowing, glowing terms after Watt's rookie year, before everybody knew he was J.J. Watt. I think voters paid attention to Wade Phillips, and Aaron Donald's going to win the Defensive Player of the Year award.
Interesting. I kept on thinking Calais Campbell was going to win it.
You could be right. That would be the one guy, yeah.
Yeah.
He made All-Pro twice.
What's that?
He made All-Pro at a couple positions, which because they don't give you a ballot. They just make you fill. They give you a ballot, but they don't give you like anything to punch in or vote. They assume we all see positions the same way. Voters are nuts this year.
Positions are a mess on that thing.
It can be. They're trying.
That out. I know you and Jenny Brentis are trying to get that all straightened out because I spoke to
don't
both
tell
you
them
about
we're
it
not
separately.
No. We don't have the political poll to straighten out. It's Peter King that's doing all the work.
Aaron Donald's fascinating, though, because for all intents and purposes, and when we did our awards, I think I ended up giving my Defensive Player of the Year a vote to Aaron Donald. For all intents and purposes, the guy sat three games this year. Or excuse me, two games this year. He didn't play Week 17, didn't play Week 1, and he really didn't play a full complement of snaps Week 2. So it's almost like he played a 13.5 game season. And can you give it to him?
That factored into my voting. That absolutely factored into my voting. And I had, in my mind, Fletcher Cox was the best defensive player in the league. He played a lot fewer snaps than some of these other defensive tackles. And I mean best defensive lineman, not best defensive player.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And the other thing is Los Angeles's run defense was not great. It was a very average run defense with below average numbers. And I don't understand how Donald then becomes the guy at the front of the conversation when you factor all of those things in and compare the other defensive linemen in the league, namely Fletcher Cox, who headlined the NFL's best run defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Offensive player of the year.
That's going to be Gurley because of the media swell for him late, too.
I agree. That is going to be
you
him.
Know,
he didn't
you
get
know, I had
to be him.
People got mad at me on Twitter because I've said that Le'Veon Bell is more valuable to the Steelers than Gurley is to the Rams. And if you remove Gurley from the Rams, you're not changing their playing style the way you would if you took Bell off the Steelers. That changes the makeup of that Steelers offense, in my opinion. The best counter argument I got, and I think he'll be comfortable with me sharing this, came from Sean McVay. And he made the point to me that, okay, you might be right to a technical sense, but we called a lot more screens because of Gurley. And there was stuff within our style that we did a lot more frequently because he was so great in the open field. And I thought it's fair to pass that along because that's the best counter argument I've heard all season long to my stance on Todd Gurley, which is that he is a really, really great puzzle piece almost more than he is a dynamic difference maker in and of himself. I know those guys in Los Angeles feel he absolutely deserves to be in the MVP discussion, and I think he's going to get Offensive Player of the Year.
All right. That's a nice consolation prize. Offensive Rookie of the Year. This one's interesting to me, too.
Yeah, it is, because if I had you guess how many snaps Alvin Kamara played for the Saints this year, what percent of the snaps would you say he played?
53%.
Did you look that up?
I didn't. Am I right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah,
seriously?
See, I did that the other day to someone, and the other day the person said 70%, and I got to be, oh, hey, well, let me tell you what it is. and I don't know how you did that.
98%.
Yeah, 53%.
No, I knew it was somewhere around 50%, and 53 is my favorite number because it's the most randomly, the most commonly occurring random number in the universe is 53, and that's a fact. So I say 53 for stuff all the time. For SI softball, I wear number 53, and so that's all why right. I guess 53. But
that's what it was. Do you give an offensive player of the year to someone who only played half the snaps?
Yes, offensive rookie of the year. Yes. Where I think this got interesting, had Kareem Hunt not won the rushing title, and had that sort of shiny thing to sort of show up. And Kareem Hunt had a great year. I'm not saying like that's unimpressive to a rushing title. But had Kareem Hunt not finished first in rushing, I think Kamara would have been a very comfortable choice here for everyone. I think Hunt's going to get it.
You could be right. And actually, you know what? I'm looking up Alvin Kamara's percentage, and he was at 45%, not 53. The 45, I think when you, I don't know where I got 53 from. I think when you account, remember he missed that game with a concussion, the Monday, I wanted to say it was a Monday night game.
Oh, right, when you take that
he
out.
He went out early. Yeah.
Yep.
So maybe
it was the Thursday nighter in Atlanta.
Was it the Thursday night game? Yeah, I remember it was the Falcons night game. They probably wouldn't have played them twice at night this year. So yeah, it was the Thursday one. The discussion still stands. So it's a player that's in there half the time, and then versus a guy who won the rushing title. And when you put it that way, I think lazy voters will go for Hunt with that. I think that's the lazy, easy vote that's hanging right there in front of you. I think when you put on the film and watch the way these teams, the Chiefs and the Saints, and the way they played football and the way they built themselves, I don't think there's any discussion whatsoever. It's absolutely Alvin Kamara as Rookie of the Year for offense.
I agree. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Lattimore.
I got Lattimore, and traveling with number one corners, at times even traveled inside. His battle, by the way, we didn't go over this because we recorded right after the NFC Championship game, and I wound up watching the film the next day. Or I guess this was the divisional round, actually. I'm thinking back his last game. But we hadn't talked about it on air. I thought his battle against Adam Thielen in that divisional round game was the best corner wide receiver battle I saw all season long. It was spectacular football. Both guys playing perfect technique, perfect consistency. Some guys winning, some guys losing. They're going back and forth. They both made plays. It was the best battle in the NFL this year, one-on-one.
Nice. That's nice to
hear. And I give him the defensive player. Yeah, I give him the defensive player because of all the other stuff he did. That's a regular season award. He has my vote on that. I know Tre'Davious White's probably going to get some attention. I guess he graded well or something like that. White was more up and down than Lattimore, in my opinion. And they also, he didn't travel with number one receivers as consistently as Lattimore did. White did it a little bit early in the year, kind of middle of the year, but he was mostly the left corner in Baltimore's defense. Lattimore moved around with a variety of different types of wide receivers.
Coach of the Year, McVay, right?
I think it's going to be McVay, yeah. Yeah.
We both voted for McVay, didn't we?
I like Mike Zimmer, but I have no problem with anyone voting for McVay. But I like Zimmer establishing. Zimmer did what McVay did, but he beat McVay, and his team had a better record, and Zimmer's been there 4 years, and they've done it over a period of time, and they reaped the benefits for establishing a culture for many years. And I think there needs to be, like you said, people like to vote new, and I understand it's great. These rookie coaches, they helicopter in, they turn a team around right away. You do deserve an award. That's great. There's something to be said for doing it the way Zimmer's done it as well, though, and building a program and having that team get better each year, and you get better in that program so to such a degree that now you're winning games, 13 games to be exact, playing with your backup QB and without your starting running back as well.
Are you okay with Delanie Walker and Von Miller sharing MVP awards for the Pro Bowl?
This is the first I'm hearing of that. I was in the Huntsville airport flying to Minneapolis today, and there were 3 minutes left in the Pro Bowl, and I guess it was a close game, and the volume of it was too loud, so I went across the airport and sat on the floor near the outlets that were on the floor and wrote my article that I'm about to hand in to you tonight that you probably were hoping I'd gotten to you many hours ago. So I don't know what happened in the Pro Bowl. No, we're not. That whole sentence right there was already too much for the Pro Bowl.
Do we want to make it 20 things and just break down the Pro Bowl? No, I was going to say, are there any other? They do Assistant Coach of the Year. That's a good one. Assistant Coach of the Year.
Yeah, it's going to be Pat Shurmur in a landslide.
Who did I vote for?
Who would it not be? Who would it be if it's not Shurmur?
Oh, I voted
for
Shurmur.
Who would it be? Yeah.
We had Dennis Allen and when we did the MMQB vote. But yeah, Pat Shurmur was a landslide winner in our staff vote. Do you want to? So I never like predicting this because I just don't feel informed enough about. I watch. It's now to a point where I watch these guys, and I'm somewhat knowledgeable. But do you want to talk Hall of Fame?
Oh, that's probably a different show, isn't it? I don't know
I think
when we'll do
react
it because it comes right in the middle of all this stuff
when it comes.
Yeah,
out
I would be up
next week.
I'd be up for reacting. Here's my overall view on the Hall of Fame. I think it should be hard to get into the Hall of Fame. And if we're not saying that guys are getting screwed and how can they leave them out and that's a travesty, it's an atrocity, then we're not doing the Hall of Fame correctly.
Wise words. That's a show. Mm-hmm. We'll be back next week, first thing Monday morning, reacting to the Super Bowl. For now, thank you as always to our producers, Shelby Royston, back from surgery. Good to have him back. Lou Pellegrino. Editor Chris Basil, those guys who always make us sound good at Canes 13. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Like we said, mailbag show, it's going to be the first show after the Super Bowl show. So 2 weeks from now, send those questions, talkback at themmqb.com, Andy_Benoit on Twitter, gramling_si, that's my handle, I forgot it for a second, or Facebook, we're both on Facebook. Remember to listen and subscribe to the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and of course this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. Enjoy the Super Bowl. We will see you guys next week. As regulation has officially expired on our podcast and there's no overtime in sight, I'll spare you the agony of more sports jokes. However, nothing hits the spot like some shut-eye after playing or attending a sporting event, and we think the same goes for listening to us talking about it. So let Mattress Firm help you drift off to dreamland. Simply put, your budget stretches further at Mattress Firm. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to learn how you can turn your sleep into a true slam dunk. I'm sorry.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.